everyone, and welcome to another episode of Attempted Adults with Anna and Chris. I'm Anna.
I'm Chris.
And today we are talking about a kind of a new topic for us. We haven't really covered this yet. We're talking about cuffing season.
Hell yeah, cuffing season.
Chris is a little bit more enthused than I am, but I'm excited about it because we found some good science. So,
I'm excited about it because it's life.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. All right, so the term cuffing season, for those who don't know, which I did not know until like a month or two ago what it was, which I'm going to not take personally, but you know. So cuffing season first appeared in Urban Dictionary in 2011, and it was defined as a time during fall and winter when, quote, people who would normally rather be single or promiscuous find themselves, along with the rest of the world, desiring to be cuffed or tied down by a serious relationship. The cold weather and prolonged indoor activity causes singles to become lonely and desperate.
Yikes. I mean, there's a lot of reasons I hate that definition. The single promiscuous part, that just sounds like super judgy to me. People do what you want to do in life. But the desire to want to be like linked to someone is totally realistic and part of like the natural way, or like it's part of what we need to survive. So another really gross kind of part of this cuffing season reference is the idea of being handcuffed to someone else, which can be like really sexy.
Oh my god.
Temporarily. Like, hell yeah, if that's what you're into.
This is my least favorite conversation that we've ever had.
But at the same time, it also sounds like really territorial and like, I don't know. Something about it makes me feel weird. Not uncomfortable, just weird about it. But if it's something that you're choosing consensually, handcuffed to someone, cool. Anyway,
it doesn't mean literally.
I know, but it's something about the term that makes me feel queasy.
Okay, all right, you're passed out.
Yeah.
So this happens in the winter, because it's cold. You want to get snuggly in front of a fire and watch the snowfall, I guess.
Yeah. I also did some research.
Okay, tell me.
And there's this guy, social psychologist, Dr. Justin Lee Miller. I always get the hard names. Who explained to NPR that he was looking through a bunch of, you know, dating sites, and he's trying to figure out, like, why people want to come together during the sexy cold months. But really, it's biological. We produce higher levels of testosterone in the fall, this is what he says, which drives us to want to, you know, partner up, couple up. But our brains are also in the process of like producing less serotonin. And if you know anything about serotonin, it's the chemical that makes us feel happy. And so in short, you need to like replace those lower levels of serotonin by Netflix and chilling.
Or like snowshoeing. Chris just had 17 alarms go off in the studio.
Yikes.
All right. So we can continually back up that cuffing season, while silly, is actually scientifically proven to be a thing. Whether or not it's a good thing, we don't know. But it's proven to be a thing. So I found some data from British journalist and graphic designer David McCandless. David McCandless specializes in showcasing data in visual ways. So he compiled a chart and had it in his 2010 TED Talk. And in that talk, he talked about how he and a colleague scraped over 10,000 Facebook statuses for the phrases break up, broken up, or other relationship ending phrases. And they found two big spikes on the calendar for breakups.
Break up. Chris. To make up.
If you, are you done?
Jamaica.
Yeah. The songs are licensed. We're going to get in trouble. So if you were to guess, don't look at the notes that you have in front of you with the answer. If you were to guess, when do you think the most common time for people to break up is?
When you have to buy them something.
Interesting. Okay. All right. So the number one breakup time was right after Valentine's Day.
Yeah, you gotta buy them something.
No. They already bought them something for Valentine's Day.
Oh.
And then they break up after.
That's dumb.
Or, like, don't buy because consumerism is bad. But they found that their theory was that Valentine's Day tends to be a time when people try to define the relationships, probably to figure out if they have to buy them something, right?
For Christmas. No, Christmas is gone.
For Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Never mind.
We're talking about Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. It's this thing in February. It happens every year. Many people hate it. I think that celebrating Valentine's Day with everyone you love is lovely. Mm-hmm. Okay, anyway, point is, for better or for worse, that holiday was the number one reason, the number one time. The second time was in the weeks that lead up to most colleges' spring breaks. Respond.
Ow.
Oh, no. I regret it. So maybe it's that spring fever makes people restless. Maybe it's that college students don't want to be tied down if they are having a wild spring break. Maybe it's that the weather's getting warmer, there people are doing things outside, and that serotonin is happening more naturally.
That makes a lot of sense to me.
So the other big romantically treacherous time, the third most common time to get dumped, is 2 weeks before Christmas. Presumably, as people, what you said before, are pricing out whether they have to get things for their significant others. But 2 weeks before Christmas.
Would it be 2 weeks before Hanukkah, too?
It depends on the year, I think. Mm. Hanukkah moves.
That's true.
But at time of recording, we are 2.5 weeks before Christmas.
Ooh.
So hold on to your partners, everybody. It might be coming. It's dark. That's dark.
That is dark. Be prepared. Self-care.
So, but you want me to make this worse?
Yeah, please make it worse.
All right, so we are recording on a Friday, and it's like a little bit over 2 weeks till Christmas. The most common day to get broken up with is on a Monday. So not only is it Monday, your weekend's over, it's 2 weeks before Christmas, so, you know, you're a little stressed if you celebrate Christmas, but now you're going to get dumped because that's the most statistically common time to get broken up with, the Monday before Christmas. So summer and fall are safest, right?
Yeah. I think it makes sense, like you said, like if serotonin levels are naturally being spiked and all of those good things, then you don't need to be cuffing up the same way. But I think we saw as well that on things like April Fool's Day, you get to learn a lot about people too, if there's like a weird spike.
Well, so I'm wondering though, if they were getting their data from Facebook posts, do you think that that could be kind of an anomaly that people were joking that they broke up as an April Fool's joke? Because this data was collected from Facebook.
But I feel like they must have gone back and, like, looked at that too, no?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I mean, there's smart people that work at these places.
Yeah, but
in theory. Right.
Well, I think that that is a potential source of error. All right, what's the least likely day to get broken up with?
The least likely day?
Yeah.
Christmas Day?
Okay. That makes sense. That'd be kind of cold if you celebrate Christmas and you're like, nah, today's the day.
I mean, why would you do that? It's like a day of giving of love.
Fair.
So like taking of love is antithesis to the holiday.
Huh. That's interesting. All right.
So we've talked about this, that it's like rude to break up on Christmas Day. And I think when I've been talking to people, I've been trying to talk to like as many students and like millennials and Gen Zs that I can in the last couple days to ask them, what the hell is this thing about cuffing season? Why is it even important? And okay, there's a couple weird things that have come up. One is I've had several femme-identified humans tell me that cuffing season actually isn't about them. It's like a hetero thing. And so it's about the male partners and their like need and pressure to like be cuffed up during the holidays, and thus like wanting to like cuddle with someone but not be in a true relationship with them.
Interesting.
And then it affects the people they're going to be with. So it like affects their femme partners, but not necessarily like is driven by them. Does that make sense? This is what I've heard. I'm just relaying things that people have told me.
All right, we got some anecdotal evidence. Yeah.
And then other folks were talking about just the holidays just being a time in general where, like, if you're of a certain age, people are looking for you to bring someone home for the holidays to, like, you know, be like, hey, like, this is my partner and I'm potentially not, like, sucking at life. So I don't believe that. And I think depending on the kind of community you come from, that's a hit or miss. But these are some things that people are saying. So I guess, how do we even deal with these pressures, if it does exist for you, of bringing someone home or having to have someone that you're connected with during a, you know, a certain point in time? Like, why is it that so many people are, like, having to use the dating apps and the going out to meet random strangers and like bringing them home for the holidays. I don't know.
People do not get brought home for the holidays with me or my family until it's been like a year of dating. Like that is not.
That's legitimate.
That is not something I would expose just the average person
the
to.
Family or
yeah. No. I don't want to expose any potential partners to my family until I know that they're pretty locked in.
Well, I think that's a good thing to think about. Like, what, when you're building a relationship, like, what are the boundaries that you're building around these relationships or situationships, whatever they are? Like, is it important for that person to meet your family? Is it not? Is it important to you? Is it not? And why? And, like, for me, I think I'm along the same vein of my family is very important to me. So if I'm bringing you to them, that is a statement that I am making.
Absolutely.
So I can't just be bringing anybody willy-nilly to Christmas dinner. Like, people will look at them funny and probably be mean to them.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, so we talked a little bit about the pressures of cuffing season and how to deal. Thank you to our wellness expert. But let's get into how we talk.
Nitty gritty.
Okay. So, well, let's think about how if cuffing season didn't come into existence officially until 2011, one, it doesn't mean that it didn't happen for boomers, Gen X, et cetera, et cetera. You know, back in way old times, they were probably doing the same thing. But, well, maybe not. But it does
mean.
They
were doing nastier things.
Whoa, shh. What that means is that cuffing season is primarily impacting millennials and Gen Z right now. So I want to talk about a little bit around the statistics and issues, how facing millennials and Gen Z relating to cuffing season.
I think a lot of us have heard from the people around us, older folks, boomers and such, that millennials are killing things, right? We are killing marriage. We are killing hotels. We are killing all of the things that were once deemed good, right? That's bull bleep, right? But the one thing that people are definitely saying is that millennials and Gen Zs have a different way of relating, right? And it's weird to them. They don't quite understand it. They want to know, like, what the hell is going on? And this anthropologist, Helen Fisher, actually says that we're not killing marriage or these relationship concepts with our definitions of situationships and taking things slower. She calls it slow love. And she says that studies are showing that millennials are actually dating less. They are having less sex and they're marrying much later, not because they don't believe in the concept of marriage. And if you don't, that's totally fine. But it's more about learning to or getting to know someone in a deeper way before you commit to them, which might actually be, who knows, later in life, there might be less divorces because of that, taking more time, to get to know someone before you actually commit to them.
All right, I got statistics for you. In 2018, the median age of a first marriage was approaching 30, so it was technically 29.8 for men, 27.8 for women, which is interesting in terms of gaps if we think about gender expectations and roles and everything. That's more than a five-year delay in marriage compared to 1980, when the median age was 24.7 for men and 22 for women. So, interesting there.
And I can tell you for a fact, being someone who works at colleges and young people, that millennials are actually having less sex. And it's pretty funny, actually, I think, because everyone thinks that everyone around them is having all the sex. Like, when you read the confessionals, it's like, why am I not getting the good stuff when other people are getting the good stuff? And the truth is that most people are not doing it, and that's okay. So a 2017 study in the Archives of Sexual Behavior found that most millennials in their early 20s aren't actually having sex, and they're twice as likely to be